There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I'm Ned Bolting.
I'm Adam Tranter.
And I'm Laura Laker.
Now, this time, we're all about mapping walking routes. Back in the autumn, Emma Griffin from the Footways Project joined Laura for a stroll around Bow in East London. Footways is a network of quiet and interesting streets for walking in London, with the aim of getting people out and onto the pavements. Their aim is to make the pedestrian network the top priority, when it's often, as we know, the lowest. So, let's hear how Laura went with Emma on their little walkabout.
We're outside Mile End Station. Feels slightly furtive, like, we're here. With Emma Griffin, who's from Footways. You do have quite a few things, don't you, Emma? Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm the co-founder of Footways, the quite an interesting routes for walking, but I'm also vice chair of London Living Streets and also a trustee of Foundation for Integrated Transport and various other kind of transport campaigning and transport writing and things like that. So.
Yeah, and the purpose of Footways is to link transport hubs, play destinations, all sorts of things by nice routes.
Yeah, I mean, the places where people want to walk. Yeah. So we started with the mainline stations in central London, trying to get people to walk from them instead of jump on the tube or in a taxi and walking to all the kind of key destinations. So, yeah, the parks, all the museums and galleries and all the kind of work hubs as well. So it's walking as transport and walking a little bit further than you normally would, but picking out the most interesting, the most beautiful, most enticing, greenest, lovely streets of London. So we march the streets for months and months and months, picking out all the nicest links, so all these A to B routes were as interesting and enjoyable and safe and clean as possible.
Yeah, this was a lockdown project, wasn't it?
We started it pre-lockdown, but we finished and David Harrison, the co-founder, and I were walking routes and talking to councils and to other campaigning organisations and all sorts of people, really, actually, for a long time before lockdown. And then I think it was autumn 2019, we had a conference and brought together some of the transport leads in different boroughs. And following that, actually, Transport for London gave us some funding to get going with producing a map. With the funding, we worked with Urban Good and turned it into this printed map. And that was a lockdown project, and we kind of busily got on with that in the quiet months, testing out the routes and finishing them off as well. In that kind of magic period in between the lockdowns, when people were out walking again, we launched the walk to the British Museum, and the Deputy Director of the British Museum came along. We walked with Will Norman and the Cabinet Leader for Transport at Camden Council, who's been really supportive for the project. So since then, the maps have gone, they've been in huge demand, and actually the bookshops pretty much sold out of them very, very quickly. The first boxes went, they were telling us they couldn't believe what demand there was for people turning up and wanting this. And now there are a few maps left, but we're basically run out. But the online version as well, actually, has been viewed, I think, more than 750,000 times.
Wow.
Which, for, you know, for a small project with a small budget like theirs, is not, you know, that shows there was a demand for it.
Yeah, and I love that the paper maps are so popular because obviously everything's now on our phones, and it seems like, judging from this response, that there's perhaps still a demand for something in actual print.
Yeah, and I think the printed map, there's two things. It is, you can use it to get around, and it is a great tool, and it's quite enjoyable to pick it up on the street. And I think the printed maps have kind of changed how you think about things as well, don't they? Something you look at home, and you look at, it helps you kind of look at a space in a different way. Mm. You know, that this is the first time, for example, you've had a network actually for walking. We've got lots of maps and networks for other forms of transport, you know, so the tube map being famous, the A to Z map, which is for taxis, but never before have we had a map for walking, a network for walking. This is the first time you've presented London primarily as a network for walking. Mm. And I think so that printed map was something, and it did make a statement, and it's a beautiful project. It's got bright colours, and it's just a kind of way to jog people into an alternative way of thinking.
So we're on a very, this, it's beautiful street. We've walked away from Mile End Road, the main road, and we've come down this street with these quite established trees on. There's lovely sort of shaded front gardens. It's all, I guess, Georgian housing stock.
Yeah,
it's all very historic.
I think Tredegar Square, further down here, is one of the classic squares of Tower Hamlets. We can go and look at that. And I think, I mean, this is exactly why walking is so enjoyable. We're on a really beautiful, quiet street. There isn't through traffic really coming through here. There's someone doing their driving test here. And it's green, it's got interesting architecture. You kind of want to walk on, don't you? It kind of pulls you along.
It's lovely, and it's such a, we've got such a beautiful day for it as well. It's, well, we're into October, but the leaves aren't turning yet. We've got these rowan trees, and what's this? Do we know what this tree is? Lime? No, I don't know. We've got beech. Because you'd be tempted to walk along Mile End Road if you're going somewhere.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah. But then you'd miss this lovely, much more relaxing, obviously much less polluted side street, especially on a day like today. Maybe if you're walking home from work or school, you might not actually be in that much of a hurry. Or indeed, if you're working from home, as a few people are now, and you just want to have a little break.
Exactly. And that's because that was our starting point was that the kind of routing apps, the city map, the Google Maps, were often just pushing you down the main roads.
Yeah.
Just because the algorithm wants to stay to be as quick as possible.
Yeah.
And actually, it's not actually that much of a time saver. It's only a few seconds sometimes. But because the algorithm goes for speed, it always turns you away from these kind of back streets. But then very, very rarely any longer, and if it is, you would barely notice it. So I guess the algorithm just misses all those human factors that make walking a joy. Because our thinking was that this is not the only form of transport, but it's the best form of transport for enjoying one's environment. Mm. So why not make the most of it, you know, and pick out the routes that are the most interesting and beautiful. This square is amazing.
So we're on Tredegar Square. Tredegar Square. It's very grand, actually, isn't it? I mean, the East End has historically been poor. Obviously, it's not anymore, much of it. This is obviously a very well-heeled corner of London. It's like it could be in South London, actually. You get a lot of these lovely squares there. But I cycle past the end of this road because there's a cycle superhighway on Mile End Road all the time, and I never knew this was here. And you can literally see the main road from here. It's not very far away, but you'd miss it.
Like you isolate, don't you? And look at that. And we're going to go up here because that, I think, is very tantalising. Enticing street.
It is. We've got the Lord Tredegar at the end of the road, or Tredegar, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. We've got a lovely old post box, Victorian post box. It says VR on it, and it's got a little crown. Might take a picture of that.
And the things
it's
we
nice,
would,
isn't
we,
it?
We would do was trying to pick out all the features on the back of the map that we printed. There's a whole load of features that you can go and explore. You know, everything from kind of interesting little historical bits, the hidden features, well known, hidden rivers to amazing steeples, all these kind of things that thinking that only walking is the one form of transport where you can make the most of all this and enjoy it.
You don't have to worry. I guess when you're cycling, there's always a bit of a worry about drivers, other cyclists. You have to really have have your wits about you, which can be quite fun. But actually, if you want just a chilled escape from the house, then walking is just a really nice way to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Because I guess in all other forms of transport, you've got, even a car, even if you're a passenger, you're going fast, and you've also got a kind of screen. Yeah, bikes, you are actually thinking about your kind of interaction. But walking, you can just be in the environment.
And quite nice not to have your phone as well if you have the paper map, because you get distracted by other things on the phone, don't you?
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know. And we've got to think about different ways of routing people. And maps are one way. And I guess our thinking is that once you've got a route in your head, then it becomes your habit, you know, or kind of rough routes or different alternatives. And then once you know about them, then you repeat them over time and you get to know the city in a different way. I guess we're just challenging people to kind of find different patterns of how they use the city.
Oh, this pub's lovely. It's quite tempting, doesn't it? Fancy a beer? This is lovely. Oh, this street's very nicely cared for houses. Oh, there's a learner driver, watch out.
So because of the railway lines here, we have to divert down there and left. So it's a classic thing. But I think if we go right here...
I remember this. I wrote about this area when they were trying to do a low-traffic neighbourhood and failed. And there's basically sort of one way in and one way out, which makes for quite a tempting rat run, because otherwise you're on the main road.
Yeah. This is a bit interesting bit of pedestrian infrastructure here, where they put the trees on the pavement.
Why don't they stick them in the road where the parking is?
Exactly,
yeah. Because you've just been out with Katie Pennick from Transport for All.
That's right, yeah.
And we had her on the podcast actually before, and so now you've mentioned that, I'm thinking of her, and these are quite narrow little
spaces
behind the trees, actually, aren't they? And the tree roots have disturbed the tarmac and the paving stones, which is not wheelchair friendly. It's not wide enough for a wheelchair, actually, behind this tree.
It's not really, is it? It's one thing Katie was saying. It's like when you get a combination of factors, like the width and the steepness or the unevenness, then it becomes, like a triple challenge and makes it even... Yeah.
And so one of the things because you developed this with various partners and councils, you mentioned in your press release there's going to be a way for people to be able to say which bits don't work and ask for improvements. How does that work?
So the routes we're trying to get people to kind of test out and use and tell us about them so we can adapt them. I think that's the Hackney and Islington routes.
Yeah.
So we've published them and they're available on a Google My Maps version online. Mm-hmm. We want people to go out and test them, link up, see if they link all the bits that people really want to go. Maybe there are kind of missing links or things that don't work or better alternatives. And we kind of want to know about it, and then we can adapt it and grow it at the time. And eventually, hopefully, we can turn it into another paper map as well for Hackney and Islington.
Yeah, so it started with Hackney, Islington, Camden.
So we started in central London, and Camden was the first borough that we spoke to, and we spoke to one of the officers. They liked the idea, and actually was put into their transport strategy quite quickly. And then we were talking to all the boroughs in central London, everyone from really great support from City of London, had some involvement with Westminster and Kensington, Chelsea, all of them. And so central London then... The actual last winter lockdown, we started developing the Hackney and Islington routes. So we actually work with walking guides in those areas because they're out walking the areas and know the history. So they've got the kind of both sides of knowing all the interesting stuff that you can experience on the way and the great routes. Mm. So we work with four walking guides in Islington and Hackney, and they helped us develop this route. So now we're kind of trying to get as many other people using them and testing them and talking to us about them. There's two aims for this project. One is to get people walking more and often, but also to improve the infrastructure for people walking. And our thinking is that once you start walking and testing these routes, and working with people like Transport for All, we can start identifying the changes that need to happen and then go and talk to the authorities about, what to prioritise. And I guess if you've got a walking link and you're showing that people are actually walking between these places, it's a useful A to B link, then doing improvements on these routes is a great place to start. I think Boris want to know, where should we prioritise change?
Yeah, and I guess we've been so bad at providing for pedestrians in the past, and we don't really count them.
Yes, exactly.
We don't really count pedestrian trips. We've got the government, the government travel data that just came out in September. That was based on a travel survey.
Yeah.
There's no real, like, pedestrian counters like there are for cars, are there?
No.
And so we don't really know much about pedestrians, and they're always sort of, even though they're top of the hierarchy of road users, they're in reality they're really bottom of the pecking order, aren't
they? Exactly right. And I think this is that this has been a key thinking behind this. Pedestrians at the top, but actually it's the network for cars is the one that is prioritised. The movement of cars has trumped everything, and that is changing a little bit. You know, we've got a great transport strategy in London, and I think it is genuinely trying to rethink that and try to look at how to prioritise others. But in terms of the infrastructure that exists, it's you know, look where we're stood right now. It's a great thing that Katie just said to me, and we were diverted from the route we wanted to do because they were doing some building work, so we thought, oh, let's just skip down another road. We ended up being pushed into the road because the pavement had been blocked off by the building work. And I asked the question, how do you feel about being in the road? And she goes, well, to be honest, sometimes for me being in the road is the easiest place to be if there are no cars, because actually the surfacing is so well looked after and smooth. That's the bit of the infrastructure that people are looking after, whereas the pavement is often the bit that's overlooked.
And a case in point here, looks like the road's been resurfaced almost in the last month. It's absolutely brand new. And then the pavement, there's like bits missing around the service manholes.
It's
and,
not surf- getting onto the road from here to get down.
There's a step, there's bits of brick, there's concrete, there's a cracked paving slab.
And then if you get over there, there's a bollard just on the...
On the drop curb. To stop people parking,
But that makes it a bit of a, that's a kind of a bit of an assault course, isn't it?
If you're in a wheelchair, imagine it's a nightmare. Well,
and I think we want to just present London as a, for pedestrians, as the one that stands out, as the kind of priority. And presenting London in a different way, giving a different vision of a transport network as the pedestrian network as the priority, is actually a new thing, a new thing to do. He's having a good time, isn't he?
Skateboarder, Can't help but look cool on a skateboard, can you? I wish I could do it.
He's using the road, isn't he? And he's enjoying it.
He's having a nice smooth ride on that new tarmac. So we continue on the cracked pavement. I wonder if something like this could help. Pedestrians haven't really had a voice typically, have they? Like cyclists of the London Cycling Campaign and national cycling bodies have had a big impact on, you know, first of all, cyclist safety, but then, you know, the infrastructure that goes with making people safe. But for pedestrians, there's not really... I mean, there's living streets, but historically there hasn't been that sort of mouthy, you know, they haven't been haven't shouted as loudly in the past.
That's it, isn't it? And I think pedestrians just think, well, this is, we've got a load of pavements, we've got what we need, we've just got to get on with it. Yeah, that, I mean, maybe there hasn't been quite the anger that that cyclists have for shouting about this is, this is about our safety as well.
Because there are pavements, like you say, but and so you're not being, you know, driven at by people in cars, but I don't know, maybe there's an acceptance or this is just how things are.
And in fact, actually, pedestrians are being driven at in cars, aren't they? In fact, even more than cyclists, which is the tragedy of it.
That, yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah, I saw someone driving yesterday. They had a flat tyre, and I don't know if they realised. And you know, you can hear it. It makes a sound. And I sort of waved and pointed at them. And it turned out he knew, but he didn't care. He just sped off up the road. And then mounted the curb to some tyre repair place, and there was a guy pushing a pram, and he had to like stop to get this out of this guy's way, and he just like didn't seem to perturb him that he'd like got very little control over this vehicle. He's just like hurtling at people anyway.
And actually, because when we did this, some people, you know, some of the taxi drivers on social media would say, oh, what do we need a walking network for goodness sake? We've got, you can walk wherever you want.
Oh, really? Are the taxi drivers getting involved in the walking stuff as well?
Only a little bit. Got a little network thing on the back of the map that, you know, that compares journey times in central London compared to a tube.
And we
got all the data from City Map, and we were rigorous about it, and it was the 5 p.m. on a Thursday evening, and we compared some of our links, and I think there was a British Museum to Waterloo, I can't remember which one it was, we were on the very in the centre, and really there were a couple of minutes in the difference between a walking and a taxi ride. That became a mayor's question, actually, so the mayor of London had to
who asked it? Was it Dave Curtin?
I don't know the name of the person, actually. I'd have to go and have a look. It was a taxi driver.
Some of them get the ear of the taxi drivers. Or they,
to actually present something in a different way as a network or something, just showing London in a different perspective is all part of kind of change and about just rethinking how we think about cities and how we use them. So not only just challenging people to walk a bit further and go and enjoy stuff, but just to think, you know what, actually walking is a form of transport, walking is a way of enjoying the city, a way of living in the city. So let's put it at the front.
Yeah, and a lot of us have realised how nice walking and how therapeutic walking can be.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously in the last year and a half. Should we go around this way and give this lady some space?
It's a classic example, isn't it, where you're forced into the road because actually the pavement is pretty...
It's just nice to give people space these days, isn't it? You just don't know. Look, looks like they've got a big roof garden up there or something. Obsessed with roof gardens.
It's a beautiful square as well.
Yeah, it's so nice. It's lovely. Selwyn Green.
I've never been on Selwyn Green.
Oh, look, this
Green
sign
before.
Has a walking and cycling sign on it. It looks like a Sustrans route. Do you know what? I guess it must be quite common to have walking and cycling symbols on those blue Sustrans signs.
That's true.
But I hadn't really noticed it before.
I find them particularly useful when I'm cycling, actually. And I think I've been thinking about wayfinding. I mean, obviously, different ways of doing it, and you know, using apps. And the GoJauntly app's great, but I think there is a role for kind of on-street things. And actually, the logo that we made, that our Charlie at Urban Good designed, is designed to be a wayfinding tool as well. Mm. You take out the kind of different triangles at each bit, it could tell you which way to go.
Oh, nice.
So we could, you know, it could be sprayed on the ground and a bit naughtily, or it could be put as stickers in
or
windows
stencils.
And stencils and things like that.
Nice. It looks like an old schoolhouse and garden.
Let's wiggle through there and then we can get to Roman Road and go and see.
They're building some new flats here, it looks like. So
yes, hold my hand.
One thing, I was speaking to some Hannah from Go Jauntly. She was saying one of the reasons people don't walk is not knowing where to walk, which I found quite surprising. As someone who will just walk out their door and just think, oh, I'll just wander down here and see where it goes. But it's like a confidence thing for some people,
maybe
which seems
right, isn't it? Yeah.
Astonishing, actually. But if you're not in the habit of walking, then I guess starting is one of the hardest things, perhaps.
I think Hannah's right. And I think you just like knowing where to walk to sometimes can be enough of a reason.
This is nice. So we're heading towards Roman Road now.
Yeah. Can see how bad the traffic is.
How bad it is, yeah.
We just announced a partnership with LNER.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's quite exciting because I think we started off looking at the mainline stations, thinking about all the... I think when you get to a mainline station in London, the kind of immediate environment you get when you get off the train is so bad that a walk just doesn't seem like the natural option.
Yeah, I'm thinking of, when you say that, I'm thinking of Euston.
Yeah.
And actually, King's Cross and Pancras, for all the beauty of the public realm around the back,
yep,
and the new station itself, and of course, St Pancras is magnificent.
Yeah.
But yeah, Euston Road, I don't know if there's a solution to that street.
No, it's tricky, isn't it? Because, it, you know, kind of where the traffic needs to be, but you're right, it's just such a huge barrier.
Mm.
It doesn't draw you into the city.
No, you just want to get away from it as soon as possible,
yeah,
don't you? That's how I discovered Go Jauntly, actually. I needed to get between Euston and Paddington, actually, and where I left my bike and really didn't want to take public transport. And the natural way was Euston Road, and that's how I discovered Go Jauntly. I think I downloaded it when it launched or something, and then hadn't really used it, but I found a really nice little back street way and it was quite relaxing.
Oh great, did you? And yeah, you're right, because just south of Euston Road, Bloomsbury is just a beautiful, beautiful place to walk. And many of our routes started, you know, linking Waterloo and Covent Garden, British Museum, and St Pancras down. So it's great that LNER are on board, and they're giving the maps out from the stations, and they're also trying to think about how they customers can kind of be inspired when they get to the landing page, for example, on the train to get the Wi-Fi. They could be inspired to actually think to carry on the journey on foot, and they get it that the train operating company, they've got a sustainable form of transport, so let's think about how you can extend that that sustainable form of transport all the way through. So the journey is not just on the train, but it's actually from home to destination.
Yeah.
Which I think is a kind of, you know, I think there's something really interesting there about combo travel and how you connect different forms of transport.
Yeah,
and
multimodal.
Yeah. Because actually walking is the one that delivers, isn't it? It delivers you to all other forms of transport.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, it's true. And I'm just thinking of train stations in London. Quite a lot of them have a big taxi rank outside, don't they?
Yeah, so, it's the first thing you see,
one of the first things you see, yeah, in several of them, if not all.
I was in Strasbourg before lockdown. In Strasbourg, you get up the stairs, and there used to be a taxi rank at the front, and I think they changed it, and now you get there, and there's a big avenue for walking that just pulls you into the city. And then you get across this big square, and there's a low traffic neighbourhood where the bollards are up, and it just, again, it pulls you in, and walking immediately feels like the natural option.
Did you go there for work, or did you go there for a holiday?
I was on holiday with
that's
the children.
That's so funny, because it's the same with everyone who's interested in these things, isn't it? You either choose somewhere that's, like, interesting for work, but also nice, and then you take everyone with you. And then it's like, yeah, I've always wanted to go to... Yes, yeah.
I think it'd be a really good idea if we stop in Strasbourg on the way home.
Had you heard about this?
Yeah, and the children, oh, no, we're here doing another transport visa.
And they realise your ulterior motive.
Oh, God. We have to walk to another
brilliant.
Laura, I guess you enjoyed your Footways experience.
Yeah.
You must have loved it.
It was really nice. Yeah, we had fun, as you can hear. Yeah, we really enjoyed it. It was a lovely day. It was back in the autumn. I've been kind of holding on to the file, been quite busy and haven't had a chance to edit it. But our wizard editor, Claire, has now worked her wonders on it. It was really great. And it's really nice to talk about walking. And I think what they're doing, trying to create a map for walking and trying to elevate walking in sort of transport terms, is super important. I learned doing my research around this that walking's been in decline for the last decade in London, which really, really surprised me. You kind of assume that people are doing active travel more and more, but actually, while traffic's increased since 2011, including on side streets, as we know, because of things like Waze and Uber and all of those, that actually the pedestrian realm's kind of deteriorating, becoming more hostile. So I think it's really important to consider it and not just think, oh, the pavements are there, that's the walking network done, because obviously people in wheelchairs, a lot of the stuff, like the, you know, when we're walking those tree pits, there's really narrow kind of bit of pavement behind a tree, it's all wonky, and if you're on a wheelchair, that's just impossible, it's too narrow, you can't even get through physically, even if you could get up over the bumps. So yeah, really important stuff they're doing.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, wheelchair, trying to use a wheelchair on lots of London streets is not only difficult, it's impossible. So yeah,
I know kind of a few like little walking routes near where my office used to be, and you know, you think they're great walking routes, and actually, you know, much of the city of London have these kind of big steps and things like that at the end that just are totally inaccessible. So that's a really important thing. And for people who are pushing, I had twin boys, so I used to push a double pushchair and things like that, you know, all those things are really big considerations. I wanted to say that since I knew that you went on this walk, I kind of looked at the map and looked at it. We should just say it's really nicely branded. It's like really lovely to look at. And walking, you know, we need to market walking. Walking always gets, you know, it's the poor cousin in active travel, unfortunately, because there isn't a lot of industry or money to be made or fares to be paid and things like that. But it's just brilliant. So getting nicely designed with its kind of key routes and something you can have digitally and physically, I think could be the really nice start of kind of discovery for a lot of people. And that's how those habits form, isn't it? You just do it once under guidance, and then it becomes part of your routine.
Yeah.
The physical map's really nice. It's unfortunately, I'm looking at the website right now, and I think they're reprinting it. They've sold out of the stock, or they haven't got any stock at the moment. But as soon as they're back in stock, I'd like to have one.
Yeah, they're really
I'd like
pretty.
To frame it, stick it up on the wall, really nicely. And Laura, you've made a connection between this printed map and the famous, the iconic A to Z maps, right?
Yeah, because I mean, Emma and I don't think it's in our recorded chat, but we were talking about the A to Z and. And she mentioned how that was originally something about how that kind of that is kind of the main road network that highlights the main road network. So that should be like where vehicles go. And then the rest of it is like you know, the kind of pedestrian realm, the quieter streets, because that's the cab driver's Bible. And I looked it up on Wikipedia and I discovered that the original map was created in the 30s by a woman called Phyllis Pearsall, who actually mapped London by walking around it, cataloguing house numbers, junctions and streets. And so, yeah, what's now known as the cabbie's map, or it was actually created by a woman walking around London, which, wow, I thought had a really nice symmetry with what Emma and her team have been doing, mapping these routes around London. I just thought it was a fantastic bit of symmetry there. Yeah. And it's funny because we went through Coburn Street, which was a low traffic neighbourhood for a very brief time. And I wrote an article for City Labs on it. And it shut after a couple of days because there was a huge cabbie protest and some locals. It wasn't very well communicated and it all kind of fell apart.
It shut after a couple of days.
It was really bad. It was such a shame because they had like a trampoline.
Some sort of record.
Basically, this is a kind of area and there's an L-shaped, two streets that form an L-shape that kind of cut through between two very busy roads. And it's a massive rat run. And they put a trampoline or a bouncy, I think it was Bouncy Castle actually, underneath this bridge, train bridge, on one of the L-shaped streets. There's Coburn and Tredegar, which is a word that I still struggle to pronounce. But yeah, anyway, so we're walking through there and big cabbie protest. But we happened to get talking about the map and how they worked out that some central London journeys were just almost as quick, a couple of minutes slower by foot than they were by taxi. And it's particularly the case at rush hour, but actually it doesn't seem to change much during the day. And she said there was actually a mayor's question on this because the taxi world thought it was parts of the taxi world felt it was inaccurate. And I asked whether it was David Curtin who asked the question. It was, it turned out, because Will Norman had done a tweet about how he's trying to encourage walking, about how it's just as quick sometimes to walk as it is to take the tube or to get a taxi. So yeah, the facts are true. It's just that most people don't realise. And I think this is one of the interesting things about walking, that you often don't realise how quick it can be compared with driving, just to be walking through, especially parts of central London. So yeah, it's another way of kind of elevating that. Actually, you don't need to get on the tube for the short journey. You don't need to hop in a cab. Mm. You can just walk. And there's these great little streets. Like London, you know, cities are just full of these fascinating, especially in the UK, so much history, so many beautiful little places. You know, we discovered places. I cycle past all the time. I had no idea what was behind the buildings on the main road.
People do Euston to King's Cross quite frequently, don't they? And you know, they might take a tube and stuff. And,
yeah, that's a classic.
And actually, you can walk it. But we should say, then this is why this map comes into its own and other initiatives like it. There is assigned quiet routes, basically, to avoid the horrible air pollution of the Euston Road, so you can connect from Euston to St Pancras. And it's really lovely. It's, you know, it's really nice and leisurely. And it can't be any more time than the equivalent one stop on the tube, which is just nuts. The same from Embankment to Charing Cross and all those little ones, Leicester Square to Embankment and stuff. The more awareness we build, the more people will just think Covent of it Garden, as their first choice.
Signs. I was thinking about this. Mm. I think about this a lot because it irritates me so much. The Sustrans network. I know we're talking about walking and not cycling, but if you're thinking about sign,
they do both.
Well, the NCN's walking and cycling, so it is actually, yeah, it's a walking network too, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so, they do, yeah, you're right, they do both, don't they? They have a little figure of a pedestrian on it. The ones you put to lampposts and you clamp them like that and they routinely get turned in the wrong direction are such a bad design that they might as well not bother. Because I, who want to use them a lot, I just ignore them. Because I completely fail to trust them because they've been turned around. So many of them have been turned around that I can't trust a single one. And it's just such a simple thing to get right. And it's just a huge mistake, I think.
I think there's quite a few, signage is really important. You know, sometimes I'm quite cautious not to just say like, oh, you know, signs will fix everything because people, you know, don't read them. But there are some instances, especially the pace that you're walking at, where signage can be really, really reassuring.
And absolutely, yeah.
London is a great example of that, and it's a little-known innovation that happened in London. I think London got the idea from New York, and they're called totems. And basically they are, it's hard to explain what a totem is, I guess. It's like a
freestanding kind of column with a map on two sides.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And they've got a map on the side. The two things that are innovative about that, which I love, it's not that innovative, but it's just someone's thought about it in a different way. One is it doesn't do north, south, east, west. It points the way that you're looking at it. Secondly, there's several circles around it, which give you 5 minute, 10 minute, 15 minute walking things. And those little things are great. And I just want to give a shout out as well to, this isn't a sponsored podcast, although I'd like it to be, but a sponsored podcast in the sense that an app that I've been using, which is totally free and has been transforming little walking meetings I've been doing. So rather than just sitting down and having meetings at work, I've been going for walking meetings. And the app is called Go Jauntly, and it's free to download. And basically you can just say where you are and say, I want to walk for like 45 minutes or 30 minutes or 15 minutes. And it will give you, uses an algorithm to give you quiet streets, parks, nice places that you could do a circular walk on. So I've been using that, you know, if I've got a 45 minute meeting, I just put the app on 45 minutes and go around. And we don't overcomplicate walking, but those little bits of tech and support can make all the difference.
They worked with Footways actually on the map, and they're kind of a partner. Yeah, and I spoke to them for the article that I wrote back in the autumn, and I'd been using their kind of random walk generator during one of the lockdowns, and it was fab. It's just nice. Just, even places that I normally go, just a slightly different route sometimes can make all the difference. Yeah, perfect for walking meetings. I love that idea.
I was wondering, I noticed some Finnish cycling and walking advocates who I follow, because I only do it because I love looking at written Finnish, because it's just absolute lunacy, isn't it? It's just the craziest language. But they posted it's really cold in Finland at the moment, and but that doesn't stop them riding their bikes. They just put kind of studs on their tire, God knows what. But they have to ride over compacted ice and snow and stuff. And they've got this, I don't know where it was, but they've got this beautiful, did you see it? Like these LED projectors on, I think they're relatively low tech and probably not that expensive, but they project these beautiful onto the snow, these beautiful kind of images of, they turn it into a cycle path by showing you, and it kind of flows like that in purple, and it lights up on the white of the snow, and it says, this is your cycle path now.
Wow.
I did think, is there room for, you know, like Santander hire bikes project a little bicycle in front of the wheel, and I guess that's quite easy technology, wouldn't it be nice to have stuff projected onto pavements that said, you know, that suggested if you walk there, if you go left there, you know, just swept you round, because people look at the pavements all the time, don't they, as they're walking.
Artwork or, you know, like the stuff that goes down with directions and stuff, yeah. Yeah.
Moving LED light that kind of like guides you and suggests that if you walk this way, you could be in Victoria in 5 minutes, go left, you know.
It's quite a fun idea.
I think you could have a nice creative use of technology like that might need, you know, thinking about exploring, because sounds pretty cool. But also going back right at the beginning, Laura, you said you were surprised to find out that walking was on the decline. Yeah, that is surprising for a number of reasons, isn't it? But one of the reasons that it surprised me is people wear Fitbits. And
yeah,
don't know if it's still a thing, but it was really kind of 2 or 3 years ago, everyone had a Fitbit and everyone was trying to do 10,000 steps a day. There you go, Adam.
Yeah.
Adam's showing his one off, you know. And that seemed to be a lot of people were involved in that. And that's another reason why I'm surprised it hasn't been, you know.
Yeah, I think that market, I think the Fitbit kind of captures certain people. But then there's a lot of people with no interest in technology, or people who are older, for example. We've got an aging population, or just people without the kind of money to do that. I think a lot of people who do kind of buy into the apps, and I love it. I love kind of gamifying stuff. But several of the reasons people aren't walking as much, well, apart from the increasing traffic, it's just general safety, air pollution. And then if you're older, it's just trip hazards. If you trip over, it can be really bad. When you're older, the consequences can be quite severe. So yeah, there's quite a lot of reasons, and I think it's quite complex. I spoke to the interim CEO of Living Street, London Living Streets, and he was telling me it's quite a kind of complex picture, but various reasons. And it also, if you've got kids, if you live on a busy road, it can be quite scary, corralling them away from the road.
Well, it is. I did a walk on, it was very depressing actually, I did a walk on Christmas Day. Which
a depressing Christmas walk? No.
Well, no, it was weirdly depressing. Well, I mean, for a variety of reasons. I've been cooking Christmas dinner for the last couple of years, not in any kind of major way, but just sort of reheating frozen stuff. And
sounds great.
None of my family like it. None of my family. Well, I but
2-year-old reheated frozen Christmas. This must be some Christmas dinner, Adam.
I go to a place, I buy frozen potatoes, frozen sprouts and stuff, and just put them in the oven and it's fine. Anyway.
Reheating frozen stuff. This is the worst Christmas ever.
And we're vegetarian as well, so we don't really have the turkey thing, so it's only like a vegetarian toad in the hole. Long story short, no one likes it. And every Christmas is spent sort of like just poking at it, the food. So this year we decided we'd break tradition literally, and we'd go for a curry. And we went to our local curry house on Christmas Day, and it's, you know, a 10-minute walk away. And on Christmas Day, I lived on a near a main road that's 30 miles an hour. It's quite a busy road, though. Me and my wife were walking with our kids, and you know, I was so petrified walking down the pavement because the speed cars were going at. There weren't loads of cars, but the speed they were going at was scary. The pavement is narrow. There's this massive gyratory and a tiny half pavement on the side. Oh, it just made me think, God, this is, we've got it the wrong way round again. It is really an eye-opener for me. And I think there are a lot of considerations for people to take, you know, walk for short journeys. And another one that you mentioned, Laura, roughly, I guess, in safety more generally, but women's safety as well in the winter, and everyone's personal safety rather, but, you know, more prevalent in women who are walking alone. Yeah. We, you know, these are all kind of major considerations, and obviously we can't solve, you know, that shouldn't be a problem that society has to deal with, but it is. But, you know, with some of these measures, walking groups and better signage, better lighting, we can, you know, for quite cost effective, make walking a natural first choice for people. And I think stuff like this, the map and the apps, and combined with actual physical measures, could make a big difference. In Birmingham, near me, there's 25% of car journeys are under 1 mile. Like, take that, you know, we're doing something massively wrong for that to be the byproduct of the decisions we've made. So, yeah, that was really good. I'm excited about it.
Do you know what they need in the West Midlands, Adam?
What do they need? Tell me. Is it a walking and cycling commissioner? Brilliant.
Yeah. Get him on it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's
get
on
him
it.
On that pavement.
He's on it. He's just venting his anger through the medium of podcasting, but he is on it as well.
That probably just about does us. Thank you very much, Laura, for your intrepid reporting, as ever.
Thanks for joining me on the adventure.
No, I'm a big fan of walking. I do it a lot. I tend to call it mooching, which is a kind of misnomer slightly, because I always thought to mooch just meant, you know, to kind of like stroll around aimlessly looking at stuff, mm-hmm. Which is kind of by usage, certainly how I use the word. But then I was rereading Down and Out in Paris and London about 6 months ago by George Orwell, and he uses the word, which was written 100 years ago, and he uses the word to mooch in the London section of Down and Out in Paris and London, and it means to, I think it means to steal stuff, to kind of like go around nicking stuff. Yeah, a moocher. So it's got slightly...
Oh.
Mini the moocher.
Anyway, that's got nothing to do with active travel, but this podcast has. You've been listening, as ever, to Streets Ahead. Let us know what you think at Pod Streets Ahead. Rate us and review us and share the podcast with anyone you think might enjoy it, and keep walking. It's goodbye from me, Ned Bolting. It's
goodbye from me, Laura Laker.
And goodbye from me, Adam Tranter.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.